Welcome back to Shnai Mikra, the OU podcast series on Parshat HaShavua. This is Menachem Liptag, and in today's shir, we continue our study of Parshat Matot with Sheni, the second Aliyah, beginning with Perek Lamed Aleph, chapter 31. Vaydaber Adonai Moshe Limor, God spoke to Moshe saying, Nukum nikmat b'nei Yisrael, take vengeance on behalf of the children of Israel, me'et Midianim, against the Midianites, achar te'asef alamecha, afterwards, gather to your nation, which is a nice way of saying, afterwards, it's time for you to die. This commandment to Moshe begins the story of the war against the Midianim. The problem is that this commandment should have been recorded about five chapters ago in the beginning of Parshat Pinchas. Let's explain why. At the end of chapter 25, after the incident of the sin of Benot Midian, the daughters of Midian who caused the children of Israel to sin and worship Baal Peor, God brought a plague upon Bnei Israel. That plague was stopped when Pinchas took the spear and killed Zimri and Cozbi. That story in detail can be found in the end of Parshat Balak. At the end of that story, at the very end of chapter 25, God commanded Moshe, Sor at the Midianim, vikitem otam, attack the Midianites. And therefore, right after chapter 25, we should find chapter 31, the story of the war against Midian. The problem is, Chumash interrupts that flow of narrative, and at chapter 26, tells the story of a census that was taken. In chapter 27, we find the story of Benot Slovchad, who want to take a Nachala. We have the story of the death of Moshe and Yahushua taking over, followed by some laws of Korbanot, which is called Tmidim U'Musafim, the special Korbanot that are brought on the holidays, in addition to the daily Korban Tamid. And then we found the laws of Nedarim, which was the topic of yesterday's Aliyah. So in other words, the narrative of Sefer Bamidbar is broken up by various topics, and once again we find the Chumash is out of chronological order. Of course, the easy answer is the principle we know from Chazal, Ein Mugdam U'Muchar B'Torah. Chumash doesn't need to follow chronological order. But when Chazal say that Chumash is out of chronological order, it doesn't mean it's random. Usually, there's a very good reason why Chumash goes out of chronological order. It's usually in order that we learn something. To appreciate this order in Chumash, we have to take into consideration the overall structure of Sefer Bamidbar. Sefer Bamidbar divides into three distinct sections of narrative. There's the story of the first generation getting ready to leave Har Sinai. That's the first 10 chapters that begin with the census, followed by dedicating the Mishkan and preparing for travel with the wagons, bringing Korban Pesach, getting a tour guide, and how to follow the Anan, the cloud, that will lead them to the desert. That section concludes with Vayhi bin Saharon at the end of chapter 10. The middle section of Sefer Bamidbar is from chapter 11 through 25, which is the story of how and why that generation did not make it, because ideally, when they left Har Sinai, they should have marched right to the land of Israel, captured the land, and begin to follow God's mitzvot. However, incident after incident takes place in the desert, the Midianim, the Mitavim, the Meraglim, Korach, and the Baal Peor story, and in each of those incidents, many thousands of Israel die in punishment for their bad behavior. What's important to note for our shiur is that the last time that anyone is punished is at the end of chapter 25 with the plague after the sin of the daughters of Midian and worshipping Baal Peor. The last section of Sefer Bamidbar begins with chapter 26 with the Mifkad HaNachalot, with counting the people to find out who is going to inherit the land. At the end of that census, God tells Moshe, Le'ele t'chalek et aretz b'nachala, to these people, you will divide the land according to the different Nachalot. And after that census is taken, the daughters of Tzolvchad request their inheritance. That's a topic in chapter 27. Afterward, God tells Moshe Rabbeinu it's time to die. Moshe Rabbeinu asks for a new leader, and God appoints Yeshua, and that could have easily been the end of Sefer Bamidbar. However, there are many similar topics which we find afterwards in Sefer Bamidbar, how the new generation in the 40th year prepare to enter the land. The story of the war against Midian. We also find the story of the 2.5 tribes who make a promise to lead the way in the battle into the land of Israel. And in compensation, they're going to get their inheritance on the other side of the Jordan, called Eber HaYarden. We also have the story summarizing all the travels, followed by the commandment to conquer the land and to wipe out all of its idols, followed by the borders of the land that they need to conquer, followed by the list of leaders who are going to be in charge of partitioning the land, followed by the cities of the Levites, followed by the cities of refuge, followed by the cities of refuge, and finally, one last story, also relating to the daughters of Tzolvchad, that they have to marry within their tribe. So we find the beginning with chapter 26 to the end of the book, all of the topics relate to the new generation preparing to inherit the land. The only problem is that chapters 26 and 27, which is the Mifkad HaNachalot, when we count the people who are going to inherit the land, and the death of Moshe and the appointment of Yahshua, that belongs at the end of the book and not in the middle in chapter 26. The answer we'd like to suggest is the insertion of the census is intentional because it tells us that the worst is over. In other words, when one reads Sefer Bamidbar, the tragedy is that so many people die and the first generation fails. To indicate that the worst is over and no one else is going to die in the desert, Chumash interrupts the story of the war against Midian to tell us that anyone who survived the sin of Baal Peor and that Magifah, the plague that was a punishment for that sin, anyone who survived, they will be those who inherit the land. Moshe Rabbeinu himself emphasizes that point in his speech in Sefer Dvarim in chapter 4, beginning in Pasuk Gimel and Dalet. Moshe reminds the people, you saw what God did to those who sinned with Baal Peor, because anyone who followed Baal Peor, God destroyed him. And then, in Perek Dalet, Pasuk Dalet, he tells them, Vatem, you who survived, Hadvekim Badonai Elohim, who remain loyal to God, Chaim Kochem Hayom, you remain alive today, just like you've been so good so far, continue to follow God when you go into the land of Israel and conquer the land. Therefore, to highlight that the worst is over, Chumash records that census out of chronological order, and even though it belongs later, it inserts it much earlier to emphasize that point. Now, in today's parsha, Chumash returns to that narrative and begins a story of the war against Midian. There's another phenomenon in Sefer Bamidbar that, in addition to these three sections of narrative, which are very easy to identify, we also find consistent interruptions of that narrative with laws that belonged in Sefer Vayikra. For example, in Parshat Naso, we interrupted the preparation of that generation to begin their travel with the laws of Nazir and Sota, which focus primarily on sacrifices that clearly belonged in Sefer Vayikra. Similarly, we found the laws of Nesachim that relate to Korbanot, the different libations of flour and wine that go together with the Korban Olan Shlamim. Those laws we find in chapter 15 after the story of the Meraglim, as well as the laws of Tzitzit. Those laws as well belonged in Sefer Vayikra. We also find in Parsha Pinchas, we saw the laws of Tmidim and Musafim. Those laws about sacrifices also belonged in Vayikra. And most likely, these laws of Nedarim, of vows, also belonged in Vayikra, because usually a person makes a vow to bring a korban. There's a special style in Sefer Bamidbar that intentionally, the narrative is interrupted with laws that were given much earlier, most likely at Har Sinai. Moshe Rabbeinu, when God commands him to write the Torah down and divide it into five books, takes specific laws that could have been in Vayikra, interjects them into the narrative of Sefer Bamidbar. What Chazal do is they interpret that juxtaposition is intentional, and we're supposed to learn from what's called Smichut Parshiot, from the juxtaposition between these laws and the narrative, we learn many lessons. It's beyond the scope of today's shir to talk about what the lesson is in each one, but simply to be aware of that phenomena when you study Sefer Bamidbar. So the story of the war against Midian is not only interrupted by the census in chapter 26, but also by several sets of laws, the laws of Tmidim Umsafim, which include the special flour and wine offerings that only are found in the land of Israel, and the laws of Nedarim, which we'll see are going to relate to what's going to happen in the next two stories, where leaders of the tribes make a vow to fulfill something. In the war against Midian, the officers who were successful in that war make a vow. We'll see those details in the following Iliot. And later, the leaders of the 2.5 tribes make a promise, which they have to keep, that they're going to help Am Yisrael capture the land before they take their Nachala. So that might be the thematic connection between these laws and those stories. Now that we've understood a little bit better this interruption in Chumash, and why the story of the war is only recorded some 6 chapters later, we can continue now our study of that battle. We return now to Perek Lamed Aleph, Pasuk Gimel. Vaydaber Moshe el Am Limor, Moshe told the people saying, Hechaltzum itchem anashim letzava, take out from you or set aside from your army men to go to war. The word chalutz is usually the front line of an army. Ve'yu am Midian, they will be against Midian in this battle. Letet nikmat Adonai b'Midian, to give the vengeance of God against the Midianites. How many? Elef lemateh, 1,000 from every tribe. Elef lemateh. L'chol matot Yisrael tishluchu letzava. From all the 12 tribes of Israel, every tribe must give 1,000 soldiers. We know from the census that there's about 600,000 soldiers that could go to war. Taking only 12,000 is not taking advantage of all your military strength. It seems like God wants to have a small force to prove to the people that this battle is a battle of God. So when they have that victory, they'll know to attribute the victory to God and not to their army. From the thousands of Israel in potential that could have gone to war, only 1,000 from every tribe are given over. 12,000 frontline troops who are going to lead the way in the battle. Rashi brings a very interesting point. Why the word limsor, to give over? He says because this battle against Midian was going to be Moshe Rabbeinu's last act of leadership, and afterward he was going to die, the people did not want Moshe to die. And they said, if we go to war, when the war's over, Moshe is going to die. And they were very reluctant to go to war. Therefore, they had to be almost forced to go out to battle. Moshe sent them, 1,000 from every tribe, to war. Moshe, even though he knew this was going to be his death afterwards, he's still eager to fulfill God's command. Otam, those 12,000, with their leader, that Pinchas ben Elazar ha-Kohen, la-Tzava, uchle ha-Kodesh, v'chatzotzot ha-Tura b'yodo. Leading this army was not Yeshua this time, but rather Pinchas, the son of Elazar the Kohen, went together with the Klei HaKodesh, most likely the Aron, the Ark of the Covenant that goes to battle, possibly also the Tzitz, as Rashi points out, and also the Chatzotzrot, the trumpets, which were used to gather the people in time of war to pray to God. They all went to battle because this was a war of God against the Midianites. Vayitzbu ha-Midian kasher tziva Adonai et Moshe. They massed their forces together. Milochin tzava, gathering together masses of soldiers. They gathered against Midian as God had commanded Moshe. Vayihargu kol zachar, and they killed all the males in that battle. In addition to the men of Midian, they also killed their leaders. Vetmalchei Midian hargu al chalaleihem, together with all the casualties of war, they also killed the kings of Midian. Now we get their names. Et Evi, vet Rekem, vet Sur, vet Hur, vet Reva, chameshet malchei Midian. These five kings, and Ve'et Bilam ben Beor, hargu b'charev. Together with Bilam, they killed with a sword. What is Bilam doing there? Recall from the end of Parshat Balak, we had the impression that Bilam had gone home. In fact, he was sent home by Balak because he didn't curse the people. Even though Bilam, the prophet, went away, Bilam comes back as a consultant, gives them etzah, gives them advice. If you really want God to curse this people, get them to sin. It was Bilam's idea, as we'll bring proof in tomorrow's Aliyah, to send the daughters of Midian and Moab to entice the children of Israel to sin. And therefore, all the leaders who agreed to that advice and all the people who participated, both the men and the women of Midian, are all responsible, and hence they're going to be punished in this war. Rashi brings up the question, why do we not go to war against Moab as well? The answer that the commentators suggest is that Midian had no reason to get involved in this conflict. Moab was a neighboring country, and had very good reason to think that Am Yisrael would attack them, and therefore they would have a reason to try to do something to protect themselves. In contrast, Midian is getting involved in a conflict that has nothing to do with them, and therefore their punishment is more severe. There's also the commandment that God told Moshe Rabbeinu to leave Moab alone because they are a nachalad which God gave to Lot, the nephew of Avraham Avinu, and that could be another reason. Let's see now what happened after the battle. Pasuk Tet. Vayishbu b'nei Yisrael et neshe Midian v'tapam. After killing the males, the army took captive the women of Midian and their children. V'tkol behemtam v'tkol mignehem v'tkol chilam bazazu. And all of their cattle and all of their sheep and all their possessions they took as spoils of war. V'tkol areihem v'moshvotam v'tkol tirotam sarfu b'esh. And all the cities and places where they were living and all their fortresses they burned down with fire. Vayichu et kol ha-shalal v'tkol ha-makoach b'adam u'b'abema. They took all these spoils of war together with the people and the animals. Pasuk Yud Bet. Vayaviu el Moshe ve'el Elazar ha-kohen ve'el Adad b'nei Yisrael et ha-shvi v'et ha-makoach v'et ha-shalal el ha-machaneh. The men of war, but all these spoils, the captives, all the goods, and all the spoils of battle, they brought to the camp of Israel. El Arvot Moav asher al Yeden Richo, to the campsite in Arvot Moav, in the plains of Moav, next to the Jordan River, opposite Richo. They come back from battle with everything they had taken. And in tomorrow's Aliyah, we'll see Moshe Rabbeinu's reaction to what they brought back.